First of all, can I just get an indication from the audience how many people are familiar with the context of water, energy and food security nexus approach? Okay, cool. I suspected that. Basically what I'm going to do today, I'm going to first of all give you a little bit about myself so you understand where I'm coming from in my background. But then I'm going to very quickly go through the front part of my presentation and concentrate on the back. And rather than summarise a conclusion at the end, each part of my presentation I'm actually going to finish off with some takeaway thoughts. And I'll say right up front that if we run out of time, and I will try to stick to my time frame by actually probably reading from my slides, I've tried to get it such that it's my own check of my time to stay within my panel, because this is a lecture I normally give over about an hour and a half. And condensing it into 15 minutes is going to be a bit of a challenge. First of all, I'm an adjunct professor at the School of Civil and Environmental Mining Engineering at the University of Western Australia. It used to be the School of Systems, Environmental Systems Engineering, which has been merged. I also am an independent strategic business and project management consulting internationally to major corporations, government and organisations. I'm also an international advisor on practical strategies for emergency management, disaster, if you like, and climate change adaptation. And as a result of that role, I've participated in expert panels convened by the Australian Government, UNFCCC, IPCC, and UNESCO working groups. I'm currently the chair of the IEEE Society of Social Implication Technology Australia, and I also sit on the SSRT Board of Governors leadership team as the chair coordinator for SSRT chapters. Okay, so as mentioned earlier, I want to cover four main discussion points in my presentation. What I call the global strategic problem, and I'll define that. I'll give you a bit of an overview of what I mean by the water, energy, food security nexus, and as it's currently used in the marketplace. I want to talk about reframing the discussion on sustainability and growth. It's central to my proposed new dynamic model for achieving water, energy, food security, or my macroeconomic model. It gets into context. So let's move on to discussion point one. What is the global strategic problem? Basically, water, energy, water security, energy security, and food security for all are the primary aspirations of the global economy. It's the foundations of the Millennium Development Goals, if you like to go back to 2000. However, they also form singly the most important and challenging problem that we face today. Why? Because water, energy and food are inseparably linked. And global concerns about limited access to these three fundamentals of life are compounded by our growing concerns about their future availability and sustainability. Therefore, to effectively deal with this global strategic problem, we need to better understand its key drivers and the issues. First of all, water, energy and food, as we're all aware, underpin the development and expansion nature of our current global trade and productivity models, which rely physically and environmentally limited resources. Therefore, any discussion on water, energy, food security must also be based on a universally understood and accepted vocabulary. And this gets back to this concept about what do we mean by sustainable development, economic growth, prosperity, and terms like that that have crept into our vocabulary pretty much since the mid-80s, but more so since the Millennium Development Goals. Also, if we accept that the world's ecosystems as capital assets, essential for continued life on Earth, then we must find better ways to improve how we manage those assets for the future against persistent calls for growth, be it population, economic. So, continue to do business as usual is not an option. Why? Well, already an expanding population now in excess of 7 billion people, more than 10% are undernourished, lack safe drinking water, do not have adequate sanitation, lack access to electricity, and do not have access to modern healthy forms of cooking. I think everyone who has any business involvement in or government involvement policy is aware of the term triple bottom line. Well, the triple bottom line approach, which really gets back to what we mean by business as usual, currently used by governments and industry for examining the effectiveness, efficiency and economics of decisions, has proven to be limited, primarily in its understanding of the interconnectedness of environmental and eco-services, industry and economics, and social and national interest, primarily because triple bottom line models focus on profit and loss with really out concern for any cumulative or long-term impacts of regional and global implications. There's a little byline there which I put in just to remind us that the interconnectedness is demonstrated by the results of actions undertaken in one sector is having either a positive or negative impact on the other two. And we'll come across this later when we start talking about the nexus approach. But the problem we have at the moment is a disconnected approach to both action and analysis is at the forefront of our current and previous development strategies. This is really underpinning why business as usual, bottom line approach, we just cannot continue on those methodologies. So some takeaway thoughts for this discussion point is that the problem we face today is water, energy and food security. It's a challenge that cannot be dealt with in isolation by any one country. If we add 2 more billion people to an increasing urbanised planet, we'll place significant pressure on water, energy and food demands. This will inevitably, of course, require increasing trade-offs among these three sectors that, at the same time, must counter the potential to accelerate ecosystem degradation. Therefore, the realisation of long-term water, energy and food security is possible, but we need to have a transformation in thinking and approach. We need to do things differently, we need to think differently, and we need to do different things. While we have actually had significant investment in environmental science and technology, research to develop innovative solutions, investment moving from innovation into practical application has not been so forthcoming. I'd like to move on now to discussion point 2. So what do we mean by the water, energy and food security nexus? Well, the nexus approach actually adopts a transparent framework, and there's key words here that you will resonate from previous discussions about underlying currents, implicitness and things like that, and also the need for interdisciplinary collaboration. So the next approach really actually reinforces that. And it's a framework for assessing and determining effects of trade-offs on the use of water for energy and food production without compromising sustainability. And we'll come back to the definition of sustainability in a second. The next approach was an outgrowth of a conference held in Bonn in 2011 to consider the current sustainability of business as usual approach and surmised, as did the World Economic Forum in 2011, that this model was flawed and designed to collapse in the medium to long term. So, where there exists a window of opportunity to a change regime that focuses more on the interrelated outcomes rather than on single issues, single industries, or individual nation considerations. So let's define or look at what do we mean by water security, energy security, and food security. So take water security first. It's defined in the Millennium Development Goals as access to safe drinking water and sanitation, both of which have recently become a human right. But while not part of the water security definitions yet, the availability of and access to water for other human and ecosystem uses is fundamental from a nexus perspective. So we cannot ignore the non-human use of water. Energy security is defined by the United Nations as access to clean, reliable and affordable energy services for cooking and heating, lighting, communications and productive uses. But while not specifically stated, it certainly implied that this must be achieved while respecting environmental concerns. Food security is defined by the Food and Agricultural Organization as the availability and access to sufficient, safe and nutritious food to meet the dietary needs and food preferences for an active and healthy life. The emphasis on access in these definitions highlights that security is not about the average availability of resources, annual or seasonal, but incorporates reliability of supply during extreme situations and the resilience of the population affected. So the nexus, therefore, is the term adopted that highlights that those three sectors are actually inextricably linked. And therefore, an improved understanding of these linkages will enable us, increased efficiency, better trade-off of the outcomes, enhanced synergies and improved governance of those resources. Theoretically, by developing a nexus approach in the context of increasing population, climate variability, and the land use change, the demands for basic services and growing desires for high living standards should be able to be more appropriately addressed. In the Bonn 2011 conference, Hoff from the Stockholm Institute put forward this model that describes what the water, energy, food security nexus is all about. In this model, he puts water at the centre of the three sectors, also identifying the actions and the actors and the various fields. I'm going to come back to this model later on in the presentation. I talk about my model. So in summary, then, thinking in an extra perspective relies on understanding of the cross interdependencies between the three sectors and other actors such as governance, regulation and ecosystem services, as shown in Hoff's diagram. To realise direct and indirect system potentials, these actors need to be integrated transdisciplinary and transboundary in nature. Understanding the nexus therefore requires the development of alternative policies, strategies and investments to exploit synergies and mitigate trade-offs among these three sectors. Slowly but surely, industry and government are coming to the realisation that current regulatory and economic frameworks are inadequate and require revitalisation, with the active participation of and among government agencies, the private sector and civil society, again reinforcing why business as usual and triple line approaches are not working. It's now at least starting to be realised. So some takeaway thoughts from this discussion point. Overall, the Nexus perspective provides an informed and transparent framework for sustainability in meeting increasing demand. Hence, it is important to incorporate the Nexus perspective within local, national and international planning activities that focus on interaction of water, energy and food at all levels. Water, energy and food in a changing climate raises some serious issues and challenges, because the Nexus debate is primarily about natural resource scarcity that will be exacerbated by changes in population and climate. Some natural resources are renewable, yes they are, and seemingly endless, such as solar, wind and geothermal. But, and it's a big but, the vast proportion of natural resources required to generate fresh water, energy and food are limited. Land, soil nutrients and potable fresh water, which are often neglected. Quickly moving on to discussion point three. I'm not quite sure how we're going for time here.
Yeah, you're okay.
And forgive me if I'm racing through this because we're getting out of the crux of the matter. A Nexus approach really needs to consider sustainability and growth strategies at the national, local, regional and national as integrated parts of the overall equation. But as I mentioned before, the definition of those terms is often taken out of context or not used. So therefore, when we go forward and talk in the Nexus approach, we need to actually have reframe the discussion on sustainability and growth and understand more a rigorous consideration of those consequences, couplings and cascading effects of associated strategies. The most common definition of sustainable development is one that was in the Brundtland Report of 1987 that's been adopted by the UN and therefore is essentially now widely adopted as the definition. And there it is for you. It's the development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That is a really broad definition. But underlying that, and in the Brundtland Report, it says it has two concepts. The concept of needs, in particular the essential needs of the world's poor, to which overriding priority should be given. And the other concept is the ideal limitations imposed by the state of technology and social organisation, the environment's ability to meet and future demand for needs. Generally accepted sustainable development states a conversion of economic development, social equity and environmental protection. It's visionary, and over the past 25 years, governments, business and society have been trying to implement sustainable development as a guiding principle, but they have not really been able to do so. Why? It's still a challenge for these people to do it. I believe there are two reasons. First of all, sustainable development is being interpreted too literally, as defined in the Brundtland Report, as sustaining development of something, which, unless time-constrained, of course, is unrealistic. Secondly, the strategic construct of the development process is being promoted as forever upward or forever onward or for an intimate item, rather than a cycle of considered adjustment. So look at what I've done here is put up a chart of my definition of sustainable development. And the way I see it is that actually sustainable development has two separate phases. We have capacity development, which we may remember from previous work as institutional strengthening or capacity building in any work that's been done. We then have a period of consolidation where the line is flat, and this is being fairly simplistic to illustrate my concepts. Okay, so we have sustained capacity. Now, capacity could be anything. It could be water, it could be energy, it could be food, it could be economic growth. Okay, but we are developing a capacity to do something. It's a project. And then as we go forward, checks and balances, we decide whether we want to increase that or we want to decrease it. So it's a period of continuous adjustment. To illustrate that more pictorial, I suppose, I've shown here a typical four-stage continuous adjustment model. We plan to do something, we action that plan, we get to the point where we've reached our targets, we consolidate at a point, we reassess, and then we go back and plan on how we move forward again, either up or down. So what I mean by continuous adjustment model. That is not reflected in the Brutton Report's definition. So what I propose is a redefinition of sustainable development as the ongoing process of institutional societal change to ensure the direction of economic investment, use of the Earth's resources, and technology advancement are maintained in harmony and meet basic human needs while offering the potential of prosperity for present and future generations without compromising the natural environment on which humanity relies for quality of life. It's a little bit verbose, but I think it wraps it all up. The problem with the other definition I said, I believe it's just too broad for people to grasp and to work out. But I make a note here that the definition requires consideration is what do we mean by prosperity? And this is driving towards my economic model. So one of the capacities I mentioned before is growth. It's exactly the same chart. Economic growth or economic development is from one level of prosperity to another. We consolidate, we then adjust, we market conditions, population size. Time from T2 to T3 could be 5 years, could be short or long. But it, again, you can see how it reflects back into this continual cycle of, you know, plan, develop, sustain, and assess. So economic growth then is considered a move from one level of prosperity, as I define it, to another level in a given time frame. And that measure may be GDP, for example, however we want to measure where we are in terms of economic development. But we actually, you know, we're not in a perfect world, so I've also come up with a concept of what I believe is a level of confidence here. So we need to have, it's a bit like what I call the cruise control theory in our car, is that we set the target of where we want to be, and as we go up hills or down hills in good times, or low up hills, however you want to do it, in terms of the analogy, I suppose, as we're going uphill and it's good times, the accelerator comes on, a roar up the hill and off we go, but it keeps the car at that speed that we're looking at, and as we go down, we start to coast, and people may argue, maybe it's good times, whatever. But the point is that we have checks and balances through this cruise control analogy, and I'll deal with that later on in when I relate that back to Werner's theories. So the notion of level of confidence expressed as upper and lower confidence levels about a target state of sustained capacity, be it water, energy, food security, or economics. So some takeaway thoughts in this. We have to really understand in the language and get that right about what sustainable means is that it's a certain rate, is to maintain something at a certain rate or level. Capacity is a maximum amount. Capability is the ability, the power to do something. And of course, it's intrinsic in this to understand where resilience and robustness falls in. Interesting, Alan Greenspan, and people remember from the US, actually commented in 1996 that sustainable development is irrational exuberance, and I thought that was pretty quaint. Okay, I'm going to move on very quickly. And by the way, please, you're welcome to have a copy of this pack. Now I want to get to the real crux of my discussion, and I know I'm going to have to move this fairly quickly. But a proposed new economic model for achieving here is to look at water, energy, food security in a nexus perspective. Now, Hoff's model... let's go back one step further. Hoff's model gives us a nice picture of the interaction, but it doesn't actually tell us the dynamics or give us any indication of how to use that model. So what I propose is a new model based on three principles. And the first principle is that the new NEX model is a living system of systems where each sector is considered in the context of a constantly changing Earth system. Water security Earth, an energy security Earth, and a food security Earth, on which at any point in time its natural assets and ecosystems have a finite capacity to provide security for a certain maximum population. WP max, EP max, F max. What does that look like? Well, there it is. Three Earths, if you like. It's all the same Earth, we know that, but within one Earth we have so much water, so much food, and so much energy capacity to support a certain maximum population. And so I view this pictorially as, and of course it's all three-dimensional, as what these look like in what I call the triadic relationship or nexus. The plus and minus, of course, are interacted by the core, and you know, there's trade-offs going on between these Earth systems, as I describe them, and you know, for example, if we're giving off water by damming up to go from irrigation to energy, hydro, or we're giving food up for food production to generate fuels for biofuels and stuff like that. Okay, so the second principle is that the model is totally dynamic, as I was just describing. The linkages between the sector systems are elastic, allowing continuous convergence or divergence in response to the myriad of interactions and trade-offs constantly occurring between them. Where convergence produces a common intersection, between all three systems. The area of intersection represents a state of sustainable integration of water, energy and food security, which in turn defines the level of sustainable prosperity a country has achieved for a given population at a given point in time. Pictorially, that's what that looks like. So these earths now, I've just shown them now as circles, water, energy and food. And as we converge in and that elasticity comes together and then the population size starts to actually overlap, we actually have, can't see it here, we actually have this point here. And I said, well, what does that mean? What's that intersection where they all come together? And it struck me that that area actually represents back this level of where we are on the economic development line, where if we have all the capacities lined up to define economic health, if you like, of a country, then you know, it's probably represented here in a nexus concept of where these three sectors actually intersect. Okay, optimal state is where we've now come, all the cores and centres are all lined up, they're all on the one spot, and our limitation in this example is the energy sector, because it is a limitation. We only have enough energy in our country to support a population that is less than the amount of population we can provide wood and food for. So that could be obviously the other way around. The centre one could be water, because water is the limitation sector. But this is the optimal target state, where all these sectors have come in and the centre of overlap is total, if you like. If it was only that simple. We have a problem called supply and demand. So here I've tried to describe how that interacts in the nexus concepts. You'll see I've linked the cores together, still active, but we now have this outer layer called demand, which is exceeding supply, that is preventing these sectors coming together. So that says the third principle and final principle of the model is that while demand for a sector exceeds its capacity to supply, no integration of sectors can exist. This principle is qualified by the proposition within the second principle above that the area of intersection of three sectors systems remains a state of sustainable integration of water, energy and food security and defines the level of sustainable prosperity a country can achieve. Therefore, true prosperity cannot be achieved at any level while the demand for the sector exceeds its capacity to supply that. We now move into Werner's relationships, and I'm nearly done, is that you can quite quickly see that the structure of our nexus model actually is an adaption of Heider's balanced theory and tridec relationships. Interestingly enough, Heider and Werner worked together at MIT, and you know, there is some reference. No doubt they're aware of each other's work. Heider's relationship was about two people and an object, but clearly you could see how it could be related to three people or three objects and that. But the structure about three players or actors and the trade-off among them is relevant. Here we go, very quickly now, applying Werner's concept and theory, systems of systems. I think you can see that while the structure may be considered an adaptation of Heider's model in trade relationships, it is the application of several Werner's theories and concepts that operationalise the model and make its inner workings effective. It's widely accepted that systems theory and Werner's theories of cybernetics are closely related. And of course, systems theory say what is the what the system is, whereas cybernetics is what the system does in relation to other systems. Therefore, applying cybernetics allows us to consider how the linking of systems into a joint system of systems influences the interactions within and between each system. The systems construct applies to my model, for it provides an effective framework that helps decision makers understand the cross dependencies between water, energy and food systems and other actors such as governance, regulation and economic services. It also helps decision makers understand and to realise expected benefits to direct and indirect synergy potentials from Nexus approach. These transplanetary and transplanetary need to be integrated, I meant that before. Quickly, the concept of causality. Werner obviously said that two measured signals can be predict the first signal better than the others. Clearly, he didn't intend that would be limited to, it could be limited to multiple. So I believe the interactions between my spheres and their impacts actually are examples of causality. Command and control and feedback. The sustainable development process I mentioned, the four stages, is clearly command, control and feedback model. And it also explains why the triple bottom line is not going to work. And finally, the concept of stabilisation. The level of confidence I mentioned, construct is analogous to the cruise control system, and its construct supporting analogy or adaption to Werner's concepts of stabilisation based on positive and negative feedback. Some takeaway thoughts from here, and this is my last slide. Validation of the macroeconomic nexus model against several of Werner's theories and concepts enable us to appreciate that water, energy and food security and nexus are spatially and temporally complex dynamic system of systems. The validation also supports my view that by applying a nexus approach, the impacts of demand for basic services and growing desires for highly standards can be more appropriately assessed and managed. Therefore, desired levels of capacity must be recognised that our planet has infinite national resources, assets, which even when managed responsibly, in fact, we can only support a finite population. Crucial nexus debate, finally, therefore, is the universal understanding, acceptance among actors and decision makers of the key concepts of sustainable economic growth and prosperity. WENA is widely recognised for many theories and concepts. I believe the ones that I've just presented are probably the most appropriate for looking at the model. And I consider, okay, basically so what I'm saying is, I know there's other models out there from WENA and they could be equally applied, but I think the ones I've used are probably the most appropriate for the model I'm trying to describe. Thank you very much, and I really apologise for racing through it, but there was a lot to really give you the background before the end of it made sense. Thank you very much.
Okay.